Peter B. Collins with news and commentary, Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. Happy New Year to you. This is our first podcast of the year, and I've got a stack of stories that I collected during the holidays. We'll see just how much I can cut through in 15 or 20 minutes. The story that was successfully buried, even by the New York Times itself. The Inspector General of the Pentagon has cleared Donald Rumsfeld and his cronies for lying to the American people. Not only with the phony claims of weapons of mass destruction and the curveball claims of the mobile weapons labs and all that stuff, but the New York Times, in 2008, won a Pulitzer. David Barstow, if I recall, was the reporter, and they revealed the coordination between the Rumsfeld Pentagon and America's television networks. The Pentagon was allowed to pick which generals appeared on which networks, and when one of them went sideways, he was pulled from the pool. The rented generals provided the expert commentary, the Rumsfeld talking points, and got very special treatment by the Pentagon. There, of course, their ties to military contractors and think tanks were always obscured or played down. And this was a critical violation of the Pentagon budget bill for every year since 1947. Because the Pentagon budget includes a clause that says that Pentagon budget funds can't be used to lie to the American people. We only export those lies, but we're not supposed to distribute them domestically. And I guess that closes the case. And the New York Times chose to report this on Christmas Day when absolutely no one would notice. The other important case that broke over the holidays was a court ruling from the allegedly ultra-liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals here in San Francisco. And they ruled that the 2008 FISA Amendment Act, which Senator Obama said he would vote against and then repudiated and voted for, and President Obama has lifted not a finger to fix the problems that it created. Well, the immunity granted by that law to telephone companies has been ruled constitutional or at least legal by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And two cases out of 33 original lawsuits will be going forward. And essentially they're challenging the government's right to spy on us without a warrant, but the phone companies are out of the loop. And therefore the right of Americans to sue will be based on the government's claims of states' secrets. And we can expect that to be continuing as the ploy used to prevent us from finding out who was wiretapped and what happened to the intercepted messages that our government took control of. Well, in Iraq, what I think will be a brutal civil war is starting to take shape. It's been suppressed for 5 or 6 years by the U.S. occupation, by the so-called surge, which was really about paying Sunnis not to attack Americans. And now that we have pulled out, or mostly pulled out, of Iraq, Muqtada al-Sadr is surfacing. He is calling for new elections to challenge the puppet government of Prime Minister Maliki. And at the same time, they have attacked the highest-ranking Sunni leader in the government, and I have no idea if he ordered people killed or not, but clearly this is going to be a mess, and the U.S. will sit back and watch. And I don't suggest that we have any other choice. We have to let the Iraqis sort this out, and it should have happened years ago, but we deferred this, and now it will play out as I think it will. Over the holidays, we replaced an ill with an un. Kim Jong-il died, and his 20-something son, Kim Jong-in, has taken control, allegedly. He, of course, is propped up by many of the cronies of his father and the military, and the South Koreans are saying that this is an opportunity to thaw relationships along the 38th parallel, but the early signals from Pyongyang are more of a Cold War approach. They claim a cold shutdown of reactors at the Fukushima nuclear power complex following last year's brutal March 11th, earthquake, tsunami, and core meltdown. I think this news is a little optimistic, and perhaps the facts will catch up with the reporting at some point, but sources that I follow and find credible say that this is not actually true. It's an attempt by the Japanese government to wrap things up and get people to move on. Over the holidays as well, there was more back and forth in the nation of Yemen. As its embattled president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who spent some time in Saudi Arabia after he nearly died in an attack on his palace, he said that he was going to leave the country. And the United States has offered him a temporary visit to the United States for medical purposes. Now, since that was reported, Saleh has once again repudiated his decision and his commitment to leave Yemen. And whether or not it plays out as expected, I just want to raise a significant warning. We allowed the Shah of Iran to come to the United States, allegedly just for medical treatment. And it's one of the reasons that hostages were taken, and the Khomeini government, which has morphed into the Khamenei government, run by the Supreme Ayatollah Khamenei, they regard that as one of the real reasons to turn on the United States and the way that revolution was aimed at us as a real evil factor from Iran's point of view. Well, turning to some domestic issues, just before the Christmas break for Congress, John Boehner blinked and didn't cry. Well, maybe he cried, but he blinked. And the Democrats claim victory over the battle over the payroll tax extension for a mere 2 months. Now, this sucks all the way around, because the issue is going to come back in less than 2 months, because the White House will once again push to extend the payroll tax cut for the full calendar year of 2012. And as you know, I have my own misgivings about the underlying policy. It's being paid for over a 10-year period. Get this. The 2-month extension for January and February costs so much money that they're going to pay for it over 10 years by putting a fee or a tax on transactions, real estate transactions, handled by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Now, I just think this is stupid. Because, number one, it doesn't make sense to take a short-term tax cut that is supposed to stimulate the economy and then pay for it over 10 years. That's like putting it on a credit card. Number two, the claim that this payroll tax cut is going to help create jobs, that's bogus. It will help people who are currently working an average of $20 a week extra in their paychecks. And I don't think it's a bad idea to give people the extra $20. It should be paid for by extending the FICA tax beyond $106,000. But the Democrats floated a tax on millionaires that they, of course, would walk away from, and they did. And they ended up stuck with this stinky paying mechanism for the payroll tax extension. And like so many things that are going to pop up in this election year, the Obamacare court cases, the renewal or expiration of the Bush tax cuts on all Americans, including the ultra-wealthy, these are battles we've already fought, and they're going to be back. Plus, there's a debt ceiling lift. Now, this one is papered over a little bit by some inside games, so it might not produce the same confrontation that we saw last summer. But still, by failing to really resolve issues, the Congress keeps giving us a Groundhog Day over and over again. Well, here's one groundhog we won't have to kick around anymore. Ben Nelson, an alleged Democrat from Nebraska, is retiring from the Senate and will not seek re-election. He voted with the Republicans almost every time it was critical. And I wish him the best in his retirement. It did not come soon enough. And the rumor mill says that former Nebraska Senator Bob Kerry may come out of retirement to run for that seat. And gosh, on a good day, he's a lot better than Ben Nelson, but overall, not enough difference for me. Not enough difference between Bob Kerry and Ben Nelson. Over the holidays, on the last day of the year, President Obama, vacationing in Hawaii, signed the dreaded NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act for 2012, including the onerous, unconstitutional language that allows the military to detain terrorism suspects indefinitely without charge, and the language is so murky that it could be used against American citizens. The president said he would veto it, but didn't. He offered what I consider to be a very lame signing statement after saying that he wouldn't use signing statements the way Bush did. And as I mentioned in a podcast at the end of December, conservative Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, who's voted with Ben Nelson and those Republicans on too many of the same issues that I care about, to her credit, Dianne Feinstein has proposed a bill to clarify the language in the defense bill and ensure that no American citizen would be subjected to unlimited detention without charge. That's a sop, and I'll take it, but we need courage on the part of Democrats to stand up and uphold the Constitution. And while the White House issued this signing statement and regrets that their hands have been tied by legislation, we know that on the critical issue of Americans' vulnerability to unlimited detention without trial, that language was demanded by the White House. And when efforts were made to include language that would exclude Americans, the White House said, take that out. Source, Democratic Senator Carl Levin, Michigan. Couple of other items. The Obama reelection campaign team is signaling that it's going to run against Congress. Well, that's not a surprise. And clearly, over the jobs package and the payroll tax extension battles, the president has staked out a position that, since he's more popular at 38% on the economy than the 9 to 11% ratings of the Congress, that they're an easy target, so he'll run against them. In subsequent podcasts this week, we'll be talking about the Iowa caucuses. Ron Paul has surged there, and so has Rick Santorum, according to some polls. And I want you to take a look at Salon.com and a piece that Glenn Greenwald published on December 31st. He got fried, sliced, and diced in a bunch of Facebook posts that I saw after this article was published. It's called Progressives and the Ron Paul Fallacies. And in his very careful way, making legal-type arguments, Glenn Greenwald points out the inconsistency among progressives who say, oh, I like Ron Paul's position on foreign policy. I'm glad he's against wiretapping. He's opposed to the expansion of presidential power. But I cannot support him because he's anti-choice. He's got a racist background. He's anti-worker. There are many reasons not to support Ron Paul. And in bold caps, Glenn Greenwald writes, I am not endorsing or expressing support for anyone's candidacy. But he makes the very strong point that there are many Obama supporters who turn a blind eye, make excuses for his incursions into our constitutional rights. And his failure to close Guantanamo, the I'm looking forward, not backward on war crimes, the failure to prosecute people who stole our money from Wall Street, and on down the line. And I think that what Glenn Greenwald writes is very powerful and accurate. But I could not believe the numbnud partisan Democrats who read the same piece and attacked Glenn Greenwald for his rational thinking and clear argument. And I invite you to read what he wrote and decide that for yourself. Greenwald also posted on Monday, January 2nd, a very strong two-part column, one about the pretense of America's promotion of democracy, because, oh, when democracy produces the wrong result among the Palestinians or in Egypt, then all of a sudden we support an authoritarian or military regime. And Greenwald does an excellent job of parsing those issues. And in the second part of his column, he writes about the fear-mongering and saber-rattling in corporate media in this country regarding Iran. And he cites a New York Times article from last week called Clock Ticking for West to Act on Iranian Nuclear Program. And he regards that as an escalation of the Times hysteria about Iran. And at the same time, my Zionist correspondent in Jerusalem, Ted Bellman, is sending me posters that basically suggest that we need to act and attack Iran on behalf of the 6 million Jews who died in the Nazi Holocaust. And this is so crazy to imagine that a hardline Jewish person, an Israeli Zionist is the right way to put it, like Ted Bellman, would risk another Holocaust or impose one on Iran in the name of those who died in Hitler's Germany. It disgusts me to see this going on, and I've talked about this before. There's so many thoughtful people in this country who buy into the empty statement, we cannot let Iran develop a nuclear weapon. Now, I don't want any other country to develop a nuclear weapon. I want fewer nukes, not more. But to imagine that we would launch a preemptive war or support one on the part of Israel in order to deny Iran a nuclear weapon is just crazy. And Chloe agrees with me on that. Thanks, Chloe. All right, a couple of quick items before I go today. Piers Morgan, have you seen him? He's a British import that CNN hired to replace Larry King. He's actually worse than Larry King. He throws softballs with a British accent, and I think Lady Gaga has been on there more often than any American politician or other political leader. But Piers Morgan was the editor of a British tabloid, and he has been drawn into the hacking scandal. And he gave testimony over the holidays saying that he would refuse to disclose disclose details about the links between him and the hacking scandal. And in particular, his acknowledgement that he once listened to a phone message that had been hacked into from Paul McCartney's ex-wife's cell phone. And I don't know exactly where this goes for Piers Morgan, but it looks to me like he's not telling the truth. And, gosh, I think a journalist or someone playing one on CNN should always tell the truth, and if not, they should go away. Final item today, Anna Eshoo was a congresswoman from California. She published an op-ed on December 21st in the San Francisco Chronicle, saying something that I think Democrats should have piped up about a long, long time ago. She talks about the oath of office that she and other members of Congress take at the beginning of every term. And she points out that most of her colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle, 233 in the House and 41 in the Senate, have already pledged their allegiance to Grover Norquist, the lobbyist and president of Americans for Tax Reform. They've signed his pledge to never, ever, 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 ever raise taxes. And as Eshoo points out, this is a violation of their oath of office. And it's about time the Democrats brought this out, because the reason the federal government is on its knees, the reason most state governments are on their financial knees, is because of this moron, Grover Norquist, who claims that there is just this beauty in his philosophy of no new taxes. That's what's crippling us at this very difficult stage, and it's about time that a Democrat called him out. I know I said that was the last item, but I can't resist. I think that if American policy were changed to reflect Britain's, as I'm about to tell you, that we'd have a lot of people volunteer to be undercover cops and to infiltrate Occupy and other protest groups. Because in England, they have clarified that undercover police officers who are instructed to infiltrate protest and other groups are permitted to use promiscuity as a way of establishing their credibility with the groups that they are infiltrating. That's right. They're screwing the people that they infiltrate. And they're doing it with permission of the authorities that they report to. Sure, you can screw these people, they're saying. As long as you get the information, and as long as you can get naked, but they don't want your cover to be blown. So you can go undercovers, but you must remain undercover. And this is producing outrage in Britain, as it should. And I wonder if we will find out that sex is a tool in the toolbox of the American security establishment. Thanks for listening to today's news and comment. We'll have more for you tomorrow, and later this week, a discussion about Ron Paul and his appeal to progressives, and lots more to talk about as we bring you podcasts every day and then some at peterbcollins.com. Tell your friends and send me an email, humblehost@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.